Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. Today is May 6, 2020, and today we are going to be talking about hands-on with Azure Kubernetes services with our special guest, Nils Frantzens. On Teams with me, I have myself, Cynthia, Sujit, Evan, and our special guest, Nils. Before getting to Nils, we are going to go through a round of updates. Evan, do you want to start first?
Sure, and I will take one of my favorites. I think we talked about this a little bit the other day, but, you know, with COVID-19, we've seen a shift in Azure to a lot of people doing remote work, right? And there's kind of the obvious, you know, you see Teams and Office 365, right, are part of that. But the part that we've actually, it makes sense in hindsight, but I don't know that we thought about it until we started seeing it, is we've seen a lot of people try and spin up edge connectivity in Azure. So either Azure's first party VPN or third party VPN appliances in Azure. And we've seen, you know, growth and people trying things that they hadn't tried before, because you need that edge connectivity. And there's a really good blog that got published actually by one of the PMs in that team. I was actually talking to him earlier this week, Ali Zaman. And you know, this is really just kind of helping customers get started and pointing them some best practices so that if they do decide they've got to go do this, you know, get them started on the right foot. All right, so it's a great article to check out.
Cool. There was one that I know Kale put in here, but since he's not here, I'm going to talk about it. I actually read about this one earlier in the week, and it's the new feature in the blob storage that we have in Azure Storage. So typically, when you put blob items, you know, you just throw them into the container, and then later on, if you need to find a blob item, you kind of have to maybe list all the blob items, look for some metadata that's in them. It's a very serial process. And now what they've done is they've offered a way where it'll index all the metadata, basically the tags that you add in there for each blob item. And so now you can quickly go, if you have millions of blob items there, you quickly go and say, you know, I want a blob item where the tag contains this word, and it'll immediately give you that tag, that particular blob item back. So in the past, we've had to have like a separate lookup table to find the right blob item, and now you don't have to do that. It's all there, right there. So really cool feature. I think it's going to be very useful for our developers.
And then two other ones I put in. One is the announcement for Azure VMware solution. Right now, it is announced as a first-party solution that is built and supported by Microsoft, but at the same time endorsed by VMware. Again, this is different compared to the past now. This is a first-party service that you would just spin up from the Azure portal instead of going to probably the marketplace, is what I'm assuming you would do it before. With that, you get access to all the different VMware technology and experiences. Some of the things we heard from our customers is that there are a lot of people with the skill set on managing VMware using their tool sets. You're still able to continue to use that, but there are also opportunities you can use some of the Azure management tool sets, whichever one you feel more comfortable with. And the last thing to mention is that with this being a first-party support, you also get to leverage the Azure hybrid benefit, meaning that you're able to bring over your Windows Server or SQL Server licenses onto these VMware VMs. And the other thing that I put in was, for now, Azure custom role creation is available through the Azure portal. Before, it is only possible through CLI or the Azure Resource Manager APIs, but now you're able to do it on the portal directly. And before we actually go into introducing our guest, Nils also has an update he would like to share with us on GitHub.
Yes, and this is hot off the press from this morning. Our friends at GitHub had their satellite event this morning, which was all virtual. And they had a number of cool announcements. And the one that stood out to me was GitHub Codespaces. If you're all familiar with either Visual Studio Online, which recently got rebranded to Visual Studio Codespaces, it gives you a container in the cloud that contains Visual Studio code with everything pre-configured, including the right versions of, let's say you're a Python developer, you have all the right Python code in there, Visual Studio code is pre-configured for you. And so GitHub announced something pretty similar now with GitHub Codespaces. And if you look at the demo, it looks similar to VS Codespaces. But what I like about this is that it's completely integrated into the GitHub experience. So rather than going to a separate website, you just go into GitHub, and rather than forking and cloning a repository on your own machine, you just hit a code button in GitHub, and you have a Visual Studio code that's pre-configured with everything pre-installed, so you can get coding a lot quicker. That looked really nice.
Yeah, that's neat. I know. I just was kicking myself the other day because I'm working on two different projects, and they're both in different repos and different branches, and I checked the wrong code into the wrong repo because I wasn't paying attention to what my, you know, I had switched kind of, I'd done a context switch and didn't think about this. Like, this solves that problem because now you just, oh, I'm working in this repo, this fork. Yep. Launch my code space. That's cool.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah. Oh, one more thing, Cynthia, I wanted to just cover. Evan, did we talk about the APIM update?
No, although that's a really good one. I thought that one was super interesting, and it's actually sort of relevant to today's conversation. So what we announced is a hybrid version of API management. And when I first saw this, I thought, oh, it's going to be an Azure stack. Well, sort of. This is actually a container-based variant. And so now anywhere that you run it as a container, you can run our API management software. And this is the same code. It's functionally equivalent to what we do in the Azure cloud. So it's sort of, in some ways, kind of that next step where now it doesn't matter what you're running on, as long as you can run a container, now you can leverage the API management stuff. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, and what's nice is that you still do the management from the Azure portal. It takes its commands from the Azure portal, but the container can be running on-prem. I think just needs like an HTTP connection out back to the portal or to Azure so it can get the commands. So pretty cool. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Very nice. All right. Cynthia, I think we're done with the update. So.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, everyone. And now back to you, Nils. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners? We know that you were on just a year and 5 days ago, but tell us about what you do at Microsoft and what you're excited about.
Yes. Thanks for having me back, everybody. So my name is Nils Fransens, and I'm a cloud solution architect here at Microsoft. I work with a number of customers in the San Francisco Bay Area with everything related to Azure apps and infrastructure. So that goes from storage, networking, compute. And lately, I've been focusing a lot of my customer interactions as well as some of my personal development on Kubernetes. And that's one of the topics that I wanted to bring to the podcast is I've co-authored a book on getting started with Kubernetes on Azure, and Microsoft has been as kind to offer that book for free as a download, and I thought it would be a good resource for the listeners of the podcast to get their hands on this book and learn about Kubernetes on Azure.
That is so cool. Yeah, I mean, Kubernetes happens to be one of my favorite AKS, and Kubernetes happens to be one of my favorite services in Azure, so definitely excited to have you on, Nils. So, I want to ask you a question. Give us an idea about your own personal journey to Kubernetes. At what point did you figure out that, hey, you know, this is what I need to jump onto. This is going to be the next big thing.
So, my own personal journey with Kubernetes started about 3 years ago. It was a couple of months before we had announced the Azure Kubernetes Service that I just noticed a lot more people were jumping onto Kubernetes, and I decided to jump on it as well. And I remember that back in the day, I actually read a book to get started with it, which is why it was still relevant for me to have books published. And I had I started with the Kubernetes Up and Running book written by, I believe it's Kelsey Hightower, Joe Beda, and Brandon Burns. And that got me started in my own development there. And then once I finished the book, we announced our Azure Kubernetes service. And pretty quickly, I was lucky enough to have a customer that was planning to migrate their public website to Azure. And it was a pretty sizable website because there was an e-commerce part of that website. And in planning to migrate that, they also decided to not just migrate virtual machines to virtual machines, but they decided to migrate two containers and two Kubernetes, which was a pretty nice learning experience for me as well, to not only just do personal development, but to actually take a customer through their journey of migrating from virtual machines into containers on Kubernetes.
And since you mentioned you're working with a customer, that was your first customer. Now, how widespread do you see, you know, Kubernetes or AKS in your customer base?
I see it actually pretty widespread in the customers that I work with. I think all of the new software that my customers are developing, I think 75% of the engagements that I do where new software is being written, that new software is being written for a Kubernetes environment. I see with traditional migrations, I see sort of a split where most customers that I deal with who are thinking about a cloud migration are taking like a stepped approach where they do a more of a lift and shift first, where they get out of their data centers and they migrate into the cloud first, just taking their existing machines and their existing virtual machines and their existing processes and tools with them. And then once they're in the cloud, they're making use of all the managed services and the benefits they have there to start modernizing and taking that to Kubernetes. But I haven't seen a customer like that first customer I spoke with that was like doing a cloud migration and a migration in Kubernetes at the same time, because that's a whole endeavor to undertake.
I agree. That's a lot to chew off at one time, for sure. That's cool. Now that's really nice to hear. So what prompted you to write the book? I mean, now we know what your journey has been like. What prompted you to say, oh, you know, maybe I should write about, you know, how people can get their hands on AKS or Kubernetes? What prompted you to do that?
So I started blogging about a year ago to just share more of the knowledge that I had built up around Azure and Kubernetes on my own personal platform. And writing a blog is actually super interesting because it forces you to think differently about when you're experimenting with something just for yourself. You try to I typically tend to take some shortcuts, but when you are learning something new and you're writing it for other people to learn, you actually write it in a better fashion. And since I started blogging, I was thinking maybe I should consider writing a book, because it was something that's on my bucket list just to go through the experience. And coincidentally, a friend of mine who's also a Microsoft employee connected me with a publisher who's the publisher of the book, Pact Publishing, who we're planning to release a second edition of their hands-on Kubernetes on Azure book. And they originally contacted me to do a technical review of the first edition. And I read the first edition, did the complete technical review, provided them my notes, which were quite detailed, since the book was written a year ago, which in Kubernetes timeframes is like 10 years ago. Yes, that's an eternity. And most of the examples, that I think 50% of the examples no longer worked, and I provided all the feedback. And I guess my feedback must have been good, because the publisher then asked me if I would consider jumping on board and co-authoring the second edition, which I considered for about a day, and then I jumped on board. And that's how I coincidentally got involved in the writing process for this book.
I actually, so this isn't necessarily related to Kubernetes, but I know that, you know, I have people ask all the time, you know, how much time does it take to do this? I mean, how much time did you end up investing in this? I mean, is this something that you burnt, you know, night after night after night to get out the door? Or was this, you know, something that you had to spend time with, but it really, because you knew the material and you knew what you were doing, it really was not, you know, a painful experience.
So I'd say I spent night after night on this, but it was not a painful experience. okay. If I think about the writing process, all in all, it took me and the technical reviewers and the publisher about 6 weeks to get the content updated. And in those 6 weeks, I spent approximately 3 hours a night writing or reviewing content. And then during the weekends, it was around, let's say 4 to 5 hours over the weekend. So all in all, I don't know if I have an actual calculation here, but I did about 150 hours to get the second edition of this book out of the door.
Not bad. I mean, it sounds like it was hard work, but I think maybe you can kind of hear it in your voice, right? It wasn't something you dreaded doing every day. This sounded like this was a lot of fun.
This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed the writing process, and what I enjoyed as well is it was not just me writing content and allowing others to learn from what I wrote. I also got a ton of learnings from just during the writing process. You have a publisher that's giving you very valuable feedback on the way you write things. You have technical reviewers who go through what you're writing about and who provide you with very, very valuable feedback on how you're explaining things, where some of your examples might be a little bit confusing. So that helped me as well in just becoming a better writer for potentially even future books, but very simply for my blog as well. This has just helped me in getting a better writing style.
Now, what's the?
Go ahead, Cynthia.
Oh, it's following up on that. How would you explain Azure Kubernetes to your grandma?
Oh, that's
wow. That's really,
so if I were to explain it to my grandma, that's really hard because my grandma never even had a computer. But I'll imagine explaining it to my mom, who does have a computer. So if I were to think about how to explain it, if you think about your own laptop and you have to install software on your laptop to get something going, think about you need to alter a Word document, you need to install Microsoft Word on mm-hmm. your laptop. And if you need to do that on a lot of laptops, it's not too easy to always take a CD-ROM and take it from laptop to laptop to laptop to laptop. Think about Kubernetes as a automated system that installs Word on a lot of laptops, but it doesn't install Word. It actually installs custom applications that people are developing on servers in the cloud. So you really caught me off guard with that question, Cynthia, but I hope I did it a little bit of justice.
No, you did. That was awesome.
Cynthia loves to ask these questions of our host.
I want to see how he explains a CD-ROM to his grandchild at some point. That looks like a little
floppy disk.
They're not even going to say little record because they don't know what a record is.
So kind of related, a related question is, what's the ideal audience for your book, right? What do you, would it be somebody who has never used Kubernetes before, someone who is familiar with Kubernetes but doesn't know what Azure has to offer, or somebody who is just starting with AKS? Like, what's the level of sophistication or knowledge somebody needs to have to be able to get the most out of your book?
So the book was written for an audience who are either developers who are looking to get into Kubernetes, or IT admins who are thinking about getting into Kubernetes. The book expects no prior knowledge of Kubernetes itself, but a little bit of prior knowledge in Linux system administration, and a little bit of prior knowledge into Docker containers is useful. If I think about how the book is built up, the book really builds up from a very basic level where we do an introduction in Docker and Kubernetes, where we actually build a really small Docker container in chapter one. And then the second part of that section is building up the cluster. And once you have the cluster, there's a second section which goes into deploying and scaling applications. So that's really more of the Kubernetes native primitives, where we work with deployments and we work with the horizontal pod autoscaler and the cluster autoscaler, and we do some monitoring, which some of the things are a tiny little bit Azure specific. Like when you're scaling a cluster, there's some Azure specifics that you do with using the Azure CLI. But most of that is really teaching you Kubernetes. And then there's a third section of the book, which is which covers some advanced integrations that AKS has with some Azure PaaS services. And we build in the third section, we build an integration with a MySQL database, with event hubs. We integrate the cluster with Key Vault and Azure Active Directory. And then in the final chapter, which is actually the most, I found it the most interesting to write, was we actually run Azure Functions and KEDA, the Kubernetes event-driven autoscaler, on top of AKS. So it really takes you from zero to being able to develop functions on a Kubernetes cluster in the course of a book.
That's a nice flow. Yeah, I can tell you that last part, I just finished a project doing that. That requires a lot of background and knowledge on Kubernetes to get that working correctly. There's just so many moving pieces to get KEDA and functions working. So I'm glad you explained it in your book, because it would take a book to figure some of that out, I think.
Yes, indeed.
Nils, I know that like for containers and serverless is the two solutions people usually think about when we talk about microservices. What is the consideration between going one way or the other when you talk to your customers or doing all of these personal projects?
So that's another really good question, and I think there's no simple answer to the question itself. Where I think the main question you need to ask yourself, whether you want to go to Kubernetes or to more of a functions model, is what your application architecture is like. Functions, and that's Azure Functions or any other functions platform, lends themselves really well to event-driven architectures, where you need to respond to any triggers. And triggers could be a message arriving on a queue or a file being uploaded to blob. And functions work really well in those event-driven architectures where you need to respond to any events. Where I think Kubernetes shines is Kubernetes allows you to basically run any application with any architecture style on top of the cluster. So if your architecture doesn't fit in more of the opinionated architectures that can run well on a functions environment, then Kubernetes is likely a better fit for you than going directly into functions.
Yep. And I mean, you know, what we found is that with Kubernetes, the obvious, you kind of pay for the infrastructure, right? You deploy it and you're paying for it all the time. Functions, at least in the traditional sense, offers you this more pay-as-you-go model where you're just paying for the number of seconds that you're running the function. But the programming model that function has is very powerful. And so you can use that programming model and then bolt it onto AKS, use it in Kubernetes. And there's, you know, this way you do get the developer experience that functions has, but at the same time, you know, you have an infrastructure that you can control a little better. Some people don't like the way you know, there's not a whole lot of customization you can do with the infrastructure in functions in Azure, but you obviously have control over that in AKS.
Yes, exactly. And I believe that from a functions perspective, I highly appreciate the strategy that Microsoft has taken there, because if you think about Azure Functions, Azure Functions originally started just as a cloud service, which offered you the ability to run a function on Microsoft provided infrastructure. But we've open sourced the function runtime and the function development tools. And you can basically run a function almost anywhere you want to run it. You can run a function. It's essentially a Docker container. And any function you want to run, you can run that in the cloud as like a fully managed service. You can run that on a Kubernetes cluster, but you could also even run that on an IoT edge device where you can still use that functions programming model to develop your application. So I think the strategy for Microsoft there is super powerful.
I agree.
You know, as I hear you talk about this and talk about the, you know, ease of management and the benefits to doing functions versus, you know, say, you know, some sort of cloud service. The other thing that comes to mind is, you know, you're clearly comfortable with Kubernetes, way more comfortable than I am. You know, but there, you know, there's still to this date, right, there's sort of a lot of conversations with the customers I talk to of like, hey, I want to stand up my own cluster, right? I want to do my own Docker cluster. I want to kind of build this from ground up on IaaS VMs so that I have full control. And then there's others that are, you know, hey, I want to use AKS. Where do you stand on that? Where would you recommend people start with this?
So that second part of your question is the easiest to answer. Where do you recommend people to start? Is I definitely recommend people to start with using Kubernetes as a managed service. So if you have no pre-existing Kubernetes experience, start off with using the Azure Kubernetes Service because it's it allows you to get a cluster up and running in about 5 minutes. And after 5 minutes, there's a pain-free experience of just being able to launch your applications on top of the cluster. If you've ever tried to build your own Kubernetes cluster, and I've been through that experience.
Doesn't take 5 minutes, does it?
It takes a lot more than 5 minutes. And it's a good learning experience because you actually learn a whole lot about how Kubernetes works. But getting it up and running and then being able to manage it is a rather painful experience. Now, if you have an existing team that has workflow and processes around building and operating Kubernetes clusters, that's where we really need to have a conversation about do we run this just on IaaS as virtual machines where you set up and manage your own cluster? Or do you still use AKS? And I see in the customers that I deal with, I see about and these are fictitious numbers, but I see like a 60-40 split where 60% still goes to AKS because alleviating himself of the burden of having to manage the cluster and having to keep up with new versions and making sure that upgrades go well. That's something that AKS is really good in making sure that if you have an update to do, we pre-test all new Kubernetes services, all new Kubernetes releases. So it's a lot easier to get those new versions and to get a managed service. But then 40% of the customers I deal with, they either make use of some special Kubernetes configuration or they use special plugins which are not compatible with AKS, and they still decide to just run their own clusters because they were doing it already.
So it sounds like then the answer is, if you've never done this before, definitely start with the managed service. And then at that point, if you choose to go away from it, it's based on, you know, some good technical or business decision rather than, hey, I don't like the managed service. Like, I want more control. You ought to have a good reason for doing it. Otherwise, you just get a lot out of the managed service.
Yes. And I think the managed service itself is fantastic because it's one, you don't have to pay for the infrastructure. If you run your own Kubernetes clusters, you have to pay for your own
all the control plane and stuff. Yeah.
Yes. So the control plane is free of charge. So that's already a good business reason to use the managed service. And just all the investments that are happening in AKS, those are tens of engineers that are essentially working for you to make your Kubernetes experience better. So if you don't use the managed service, that's an investment that you as a company have to make yourself. And there are reasons why you might want to still do it, but it's like you said, Evan, truly a well thought out decision that you as a company have to make.
Yeah, you know, Evan, there is this certification that you can get. I think it's called the Certified Kubernetes Engineer or something like that. I'm sure Niels is already certified in that. But
yes, I am.
so you go through this. There's a book or something something that you have to go through called Kubernetes the Hard Way,
yeah,
where you actually build a Kubernetes cluster from scratch. You know, like you said, from scratch. And it's a 5-day course, okay, to build a cluster the first time. So that gives you an idea how
I know where I'm going.
I know where I'm going.
Yes.
Yeah, Kubernetes. Isn't that what it's called, Niels?
Yes, there's a tutorial by Kelsey Hightower, who works at Google, who has a tutorial online about how to build your own Kubernetes cluster, and he calls it Kubernetes the Hard Way.
Awesome.
To comment on what Sujeet said on the certification itself, I do have the CKA certification, so the Certified Kubernetes Administrator certification, but I had to take the exam twice because the exam has one, a Kubernetes end user experience, which is deploying applications onto Kubernetes. But then there's a second part, which is the administration of making sure that your cluster runs well and looking at logs and what you need to do if a cluster doesn't work well. Because on the exam, you actually get a cluster that's broken and you have to fix it. Hmm. And my first try on the exam, I didn't know how to fix it because I was using a managed service all the time.
That speaks highly of the managed services, I think, or managed service at that point.
Yes, indeed.
That's cool. Very nice, Niels. Well, it's great to hear about the book. I'm sure we'll please send us a link to the book so we can add it along with the show notes. Any more questions for Niels before we let him go?
No, this is great. Thanks, Niels. So happy to talk to you on a happy subject.
And
very glad to be able to talk happily with you, Evan.
Thank you for taking the effort to write the book. I'm sure it'll be very well received. I was just reading my original book on Kubernetes.
Fippy goes to the zoo.
That's my little kitty book on Kubernetes, but I'm sure yours is the real thing. Well, congratulations again on the book, and I look forward to getting on the show sometime in the future to talk about Kubernetes or some other topic at the time.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Niels.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.